Hi, we're Grace and Clara, here to shake up the world of women's health.
We know firsthand how intimidating it can be to speak up when it comes to issues like your menstrual cycle or menopause.
That's why we create Unprocessed, a weekly podcast where we dive into every aspect of women's health, from mental well-being to physical nutrition.
We're here to ask the burning questions and encourage us all to advocate for ourselves.
So get ready for some smart, cheeky and witty discussions about all things women's health.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I have an incredible health story for us to dive into together. Today, I'm joined by Colette Chase. Colette was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of triple negative breast cancer. Her story begins when on holiday the previous month, she felt a small lump and her worst fears were confirmed on her return home. Being a mother of two girls, an avid runner, fit and healthy with a clean lifestyle, the news was a massive shock. 6 months of debilitating treatment commenced immediately. Chemotherapy, surgery, radiation. As a community ambassador for National Breast Cancer Australia, Colette hopes to share her story to create meaningful awareness about this condition. Colette's whirlwind journey is a story of strength, resilience, and hope. Let's jump into the chat.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I know our audience will be extremely interested in hearing about your health journey. But I was wondering if you could take us back to the beginning, to that moment where you first found out you were diagnosed with breast cancer and how you coped with the news and what was your immediate reaction?
To take you back to the very beginning, I actually felt a lump while I was on holidays overseas. And so as soon as I got back, I scheduled myself in for, you know, a mammogram and ultrasound, trying not to get too concerned. And so my fright or my diagnosis was kind of in three parts. And so I head off for my ultrasound, my mammogram and ultrasound, and I'm lying there and this sonographer is waving the wand over this particular point backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And she finally puts the wand down and says, "I'm just going to get the doctor to come and have a look." And you just get this immediate feeling of dread. So the doctor comes in and he has a look and he says, "Have you got time to stay for some biopsy? We'd like to biopsy this area." And it was immediately suspected the worst and found it very hard to keep it together. But by the time I got home, I talked myself out of it. You know, it'll be fine. It's precautionary. 2 days later, I'm sitting in my GP's rooms and she says, "I'm very sorry, Colette, it's cancer." I have a very physical reaction, apparently. I started rocking backwards and forwards, crying, going, you know, "Oh my God, oh my God." And she kind of tried to talk me down from the ledge, saying, "It's very small, it's garden variety. They'll just take out the tumor and you'll just have a little bit of radiation and all my ladies are fine. You'll be fine." So I get home and I'm trying to process. And I was referred to a surgeon to have the tumor removed and went through that process. And it was in the results of the pathology of the tumor that had been removed that I really understood the severity of my situation. So he didn't mince words. He said, "You have something called metaplastic triple negative breast cancer. You have a small tumor in your lymph nodes," because I had a couple of those removed. "We're going to have to throw the book at you. You'll have to have chemotherapy, radiation, and also more surgery." And he wouldn't look me in the eye and tell me that I was going to survive. So again, in that moment, I think I shot up out of my chair as though I was going to leave the room. I'm not going to listen to this. I think that's why I did it, because I don't know why I would have stood bolt upright. I had a very close friend with me. As soon as I got to my feet caved out from under me. She picked me up, and again, all I could do was go, "No, no, 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 no," like a bit of a crazy lady, a real Academy performance. The whole waiting room heard. So just not well, just really a massive shock. It just comes out of nowhere. I wasn't equipped to take it in my stride at all in that moment.
Oh, that's absolutely heartbreaking. And like, thank goodness you had a friend there and you weren't alone.
Yeah, she had her own, she has her own experience with cancer. She was diagnosed very young with non-Hodgkin's, and I you know, she was the obvious choice and she wouldn't have it any other way. Don't have a significant other. Children were 18 and 20 at the time. And to be honest, I didn't really want family around me. You know, it was a better option. And yeah, so poor thing. She literally had to pick me up off the ground.
How did you go telling your family, or did you need some time before you came to understand the situation you're in?
There isn't time. Like, that's just the thing. As the minute you're diagnosed, you're on a different timeline to everybody else. It's immediate. The surgeon delivered that news, and from his surgery, I went straight for full body scans and full organ scans. Like, so full bone and organ scans. They don't want to waste time, so they're looking for spread. Because I already had a small tumor in my lymph nodes, your lymphatic system is like the highway of the body. So they were worried about spread. So there's no time to process. There's no time to think about it. I think I got home from all of that and called my mum, blurted it out to her with no finesse. Mum, I've got breast cancer, you know. She's quite a tough lady and she handled it quite well. But it was my girls. They were out of the house at the time, and so I had all these, you know, clever, you know, I'll be okay kind of statements in my head kicking around. And the minute I saw their faces, I just couldn't contain myself. And I think we all just had a cry. They were extremely frightened. They were frightened for their mum and they were frightened for themselves, which was, you know, already my second worry. I was like, oh, my God, you know. But that fear was put to rest quite early on. When you're diagnosed, one of your first appointments is with a genetics team, and they sit you down and go through your complete family history. And what they're looking for is, you know, cancers in your family history, and in particular, young cancers. Did anyone get cancer when they were young, male or female? Luckily, I have very little and no young cancers. And so they boiled it down to sporadic. It's actually called sporadic. My cancer just happened out of the blue. And while that's a bit of a bitter pill to swallow in one sense, in another sense, it made my girls have a what they call is population risk, no different to any other woman out there. So that was an early victory, which we all really, really needed. It's like, okay, well, we're just going to focus on me, my treatment, and let's get through it and as a family.
Wow. Yeah. So once you've told them and you've gone and got these genetic tests and you've had the body scan, what was the next step from there?
The surgeon very kindly called me, I think, over the weekend to give me the results that they found nothing further in the scans. So the spread was still local, as best they can tell with these things. And then very quickly, I was referred. I live in the northwest of Sydney, and I was referred to a big cancer centre, the Crown Princess Mary Cancer Clinic in Westmead. They explained to me that that's where all the expertise is in the public system, so you need to go there. I was referred to an oncologist. That all happened in a week. Suddenly, I'm walking through the corridors of the Crown Princess Mary Cancer Clinic. I'm what my garment is telling me. I'm a fit, very fit, athletic person. I have a raging holiday tan. I'm feeling fit as a fiddle. And I'm walking through and I'm seeing oncology, cancer clinic, this, radiology, you know, and all these signs as though they're rushing. I was with my friend and she literally had to like guide me this way, this way. I was so out of place, and straight to the oncologist, and she can't mince words. She's like, okay, we're going to give you chemotherapy. This is going to be your regimen. I will see you every fortnight. I went to my local hospital as a private patient. I was fortunate enough then for the chemo, and that was just a logistics thing, quicker to get to, easier to get home. And the journey just commences. So from first diagnosis to sitting in the chair, it's a couple of weeks. So wow. you haven't really processed it fully. The professionals in the cancer space, I mean, in any space, but particularly in the cancer space, they're just second to none. But they have to be quite direct with you. So they're sitting there and they're saying to you, okay, we're going to go through the side effects. And the easiest thing to do is just go from head to toe. Okay, migraines, blah, 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 blah. Mouth ulcers, blah, 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 blah. Stomach upset, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you're still coming to terms. You haven't even had a chance to really process what's happening to you. And all of a sudden you're sitting in a chair and somebody's talking to you about mouth ulcers. You're like, it's too quick. You're reeling, you know. And then the physical reaction I always had was, I don't want to be here. I just don't want to be here. I just had a very low level of acceptance. So, you know, you've got the IV in your arm and you can see the thing, and then it hits your arm and it's this sort of cold, dull ache. And then it starts. Within minutes, you've got this blinding headache and then the deterioration of a bunch of side effects.
I am shocked at how quick that turnaround is. Like, I was thinking months, but days, weeks.
Very, very quickly. Cancer doesn't muck around, and my type of cancer is, it's 1% of us, and it's only been known as a cancer in its own right, a subset in its own right, for less than 20 years. In a big, big centre like Westmead Cancer Clinic, they see one or two cases a year.
You're one in a million.
Yeah, exactly. I'm special. They can't afford to muck around.
Yeah.
And I did speak to quite a few different oncologists, because when you're in the public system, often you see other registrars, like more junior oncology doctors, when they're just sort of taking note of your symptoms on how you're responding to things. And one of them said something that really struck a chord with me. And she said, in oncology, we work in small percentages. If we think we can give you 5% better chance at survival, we will give it to you. We will throw that therapy at you. We will do that, you know. And I was like, wow, that's something to think about. You know, that's really true. Most of us are accustomed, if we have a surgical procedure or whatever, the doctor will give you the worst case scenario and say, oh, that's a one in a million occurrence and you'll be fine. And suddenly people are talking to you in 5% better chance. It's just mind-blowing.
And it's so small as well. Hey guys, it's Grace here. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I want to interrupt our chat and share something really exciting with you all. We've taken your feedback into consideration over the last 12 months and used it to build a new app with one goal in mind, to help you feel good. We're proud to say that our app extends beyond delicious recipes and will be supporting you 24/7 to help nourish your mind and body. In this app, you'll have access to our complete recipe library with over 2,500 recipes, experts to help you improve your sleep, sustainable tutorials to keep your produce fresher for longer, and movement classes that will make you feel so good. We have popped a special offer in the show notes below. Now let's get back into the episode.
Talking through this journey, and your doctors are very direct, but as a patient,
yes,
would you have liked to seen a bit more empathy from the doctors in that sense, because it was such a quick turnaround and so direct?
I honestly don't think it would have made a difference in that in those moments. There's no sugarcoating that type of news. I wouldn't have heard it anyway, especially in the initial diagnosis. They're dealing very much in unknowns. And, yes, there are a lot of varying factors that give you your prognosis, the size of the tumour, the type of cancer, the subset of cancer, blah, blah, blah. But still, they speak in general terms. They don't want to give you information that they can't, that doesn't necessarily stand up. So I guess not. I mean, I they were direct. They weren't rude. There was empathy in their eyes. They were genuinely sorry and upset that they had to impart that news, but it's straight between the eyes. There's no other way to really deliver it.
But was there a way for you to mentally prepare, or was there support for you to help you get through the emotional tolls of all the treatment?
Not support other than the people around me, my own personal support. Because the timeline is so quick, I didn't have time to mentally prepare. You had to do it on the job, you know. You had to do it as you were going through the treatment. And I know my initial reaction was one of extreme fear. I found the edge of my resilience that day. People think that I'm quite a resilient person because I'm so direct and I'm so independent and that, but I had to be drip-fed information, and I couldn't Google, and not that you should, and I didn't want percentages or anything like that. I just couldn't take it in. For me, there was not a lot you could do to help me regulate my emotions and find some sort of resilient place in the initial stages. In fact, I had a lot of resentment at first. I felt unduly chosen. You know, I felt like I was in this lineup, and some dude with a, you know, robe and no face and a whatever pointed a finger and said "you" randomly, and I felt cheated. Because I had a healthy lifestyle and I didn't have a checkered past. But over time, and as I went through my treatment, I came to understand that how I started my treatment, the physical position I was in when I started my treatment, did hold me in good stead, helped me withstand the rigors of the treatment. Had I been a different person, perhaps they would not have been able to give me this triple dose protocol. They call it dose dense protocol. And so once I started reframing that in my mind over a period of time, that's when the light went on in my mind, and the resilience and the fight came in. I went from barely surviving it, mostly in my mind, you front up for your appointments and like anybody else, to really kicking it up a notch and going, okay, fine. Yeah. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get everything back. Cancer treatment is not going to rob me of anything. I'm up for the fight. So that was some mental shift that took me a while to sort of work out in my mind, but it was as I was going through treatment.
How long was your treatment?
Yeah, so chemo was 4 months.
Wow.
Every fortnight. Yes. And then immediately after that, I had surgery to have a superior margin. So by then I'd met another surgeon. I'd been referred to a different surgeon, and she's an oncoplastic surgeon. So not only can she remove tumors, but she can give you a good cosmetic result. And I feel very, very fortunate to have met her. So she found the original tumor site and took a superior margin and did some sort of nips and tucks and different things, so that when I look in the mirror, I still look like myself. If you're fortunate enough to be in that position, it helps with your recovery once the treatment is done, and because you're not always reminded when you look in the mirror and you don't feel different.
Because I have heard a few stories of women that have lost their breasts and then they've had reconstruction or plastics, and they don't feel like it's their body anymore. This is a common thing I'm hearing.
Yes. And it's a very important point. I know we're dealing in life and death, but I think historically there used to be a bit of an attitude about, well, we're dealing with life and death, so if you're alive, you're alive.
Mm.
That, and yes, of course, that's our fundamental requirement. But quality of life is very, very important as well. And for a woman, feeling whole is very important to your self-esteem and how you feel as a person and how you feel as a woman. And there's much, much more recognition these days that that is equally as important and a consideration. So I understand that mastectomies have come a long way. A lot of times it's still indicated based on the size or location of the tumor, but they can do a lot to achieve a really positive outcome. So there can be nipple sparing in many cases. And so implants replace the breast tissue, and you can get a good cosmetic result. And I think it's really, really important, and it should continue to be a focus and an area for improvement in breast cancer.
Absolutely. And from your perspective, you said you're a very healthy person, and it kind of struck you that you were that one in a million person that got this diagnosis. So how has your approach to health changed since going through this journey?
I struggled a little bit. The hardest part is mentally, the hardest part is not going through the treatment. It's once the treatment is complete. So once the treatment is complete, yes, physically you can start repairing. Mentally, it's very, very hard for the first couple of years because you're cut loose. When you're in treatment, well, you're taking these horrible drugs and they are fighting the cancer. And no one can ever tell you definitively that they have removed every cancer cell in your body. So once your treatment is complete, and in the case of triple negative breast cancer patients, there isn't anything that we can take to prevent recurrence. With the positive ladies, there are hormone blockers because triple negative, and it means it's negative for these three hormone receptors that the cancer kind of feeds on. So they take hormone suppressing therapies, which is no picnic either, but it gives them confidence that their cancer is less likely to return. With us triple negative people, we don't have that. So you literally sort of cut loose, and it's very hard to regulate your mind and your anxiety over recurrence, because any ache or pain, you scan your body a lot in your mind, and any ache or pain that you have that's persistent, you're afraid that it's possibly cancer. And the fear of recurrence is twofold. It's going through horrible treatment again and how debilitating that is and how miserable that is. And then also, of course, the life and death question, because if it comes back, it's likely to come back, you know, if it comes back distally, so away from the original site, then you're stage four and then you're on permanent treatment and that and a shortened lifespan. So you walk around with that for a couple of years, so that's very, very hard. Going back to your question, sorry, because I didn't really, really answer it, you're looking for control because you have so little. And in my case, okay, so I did rehab myself back, but I was already a runner. I already was eating healthily. I was already, so the one thing that I could do, and I looked and I surrounded myself with an army of people that I resonated with. There's so much information out there and so many different approaches. But I've got the physio I like, the lymphatic physio I like, a nutritionist, whatever. And it's interesting that I'm on your podcast because a couple of years ago I quit sugar because it's something I can control. Sugar is extremely inflammatory on the body. I don't need to tell you that or your listeners. It was one thing that I could do to control my health and well-being. So that was one thing that I did. That was on top of my usual sort of healthy lifestyle. It helped, like I said, give me control. So it's about trying to find the things that you can control versus the things you can't.
That's wonderful advice. I'm curious, though, through that transition of being in chemotherapy to then it just stopping, that seems very jarring. Does this mean you have to constantly be going to doctors, getting checks?
No, I know just through the people I know that different states and different countries do things differently. Here in New South Wales, unless you haven't had a clear pathological response, right, as far as my oncologist is concerned, the tumour is gone, the chemotherapy, radiation, whatever, by and large, mops up whatever's left, you move on to then just 12-month mammograms and ultrasounds. And how I scheduled my appointments to also help with my anxiety over recurrence, I see the oncologist and I see the surgeon, and I've spaced those 6 months apart. So at least I'm seeing someone every 6 months just for a chat about things. I approach my 5 years at the end of this year in October. And I saw my oncologist recently, and so that was probably about the 4.5 year mark. And we decided, because I see the surgeon towards the end of the year, that I'm sort of released from her care. I don't need to go back for regular appointments. And I have to say, I get very emotional. She's one of three people that have absolutely saved my life. So saying a goodbye is actually quite hard. very emotional. But her parting words to me were, you know your body, remain vigilant. If you feel anything that feels unusual, get it checked out. And I owe my life to her, and she's an amazing woman. It kind of commits you to purgatory, though, because we all have aches and pains, and forevermore, you always, that's your first thought, you know. Did I pull a muscle or is it a tumor? You know,
yes.
And you have to do that little dance in your mind to, you know, come out of that space. And if it goes away, you know, it's like if you feel it for 3, 4, 5 weeks, then get it checked out. That's kind of the rule that I have with her.
So how did you become a community ambassador for the National Breast Cancer Foundation?
One of the things when I was in treatment, so avid runner and had been entering races for 4 or 5 years prior to diagnosis. And I had done the City to Surf many times, and it was one of my favorite races. But I'm ashamed to say I only ever ran it for myself. Enter, pay the money, run the race. While I was in treatment, I was thinking all the things that I, you know, if I can, you know, if I get over through this, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. One of them was fundraise for the City to Surf. And when I came to choosing my who I was going to fundraise for, I came across National Breast Cancer Foundation. A group of friends and I, we ran the race. We raised about $8,000, which I was pretty happy with. You know, I have a small reach. And they send you out a T-shirt, National Breast Cancer Foundation. You wear it with pride on the day. I'm running along and I see this young girl. She's got short hair and she's wearing the T-shirt. And I'm already suspecting because of the short hair, right? I've been there. I lost all my hair as well. So I run up alongside her, but I didn't want to make it, you know, make assumptions. And I say, oh, who are you running for? She goes, myself. Who are you running for? Oh, myself. And that was a young Irish girl called Martine. And later, and a friend of hers took a photo of us while we're running in our shirts. And later on, social media being the beast that it is, someone who follows me also follows her and saw that photo and put us in touch, which was really lovely. And I saw from her Instagram page that she was doing this thing called Community Ambassador. So we made inquiries and had a look on the website and put my application in. So basically it's people like me that have been through the breast cancer journey, using our story to help spread their message. And so I've been doing it now since July last year. And
wow.
I've loved it, and it's given meaning to what's happened to me.
So what projects and events are you involved with as being an ambassador?
Mostly speaking engagements. So October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, that was a busy month. I found myself at the Fullerton Hotel. They were launching a pink high tea with some of the proceeds going towards the foundation. So stand up, speak up there. The exercise brand LSKD, they've been supporting National Breast Cancer Foundation for years. They had a fun run at Bondi, which I took part in, and then did a bit of stand up, speak up, some mainly speaking events. I've had some journalists contact me for different pieces in different publications. I was on Channel 9 recently. That was exciting for the 30-year anniversary of the foundation. So a little bit of a story there. I said a few words about what the foundation has meant to me. So that was fun. So these are all fun experiences, and I've never been on a podcast before. So,
oh, I'm your first.
Yeah, so you are.
I feel honoured.
Likewise.
So how do you hope sharing your story will impact others who are facing similar challenges?
Well, I hope I inspire them in some small way that when you're in it and you're so frightened and you wonder what's going to become of you and will you ever feel the same again, I hope that sharing my story in a candid way inspires them and helps them through their journey. I hope to reach, you know, even one more person to with my early detection message. There is 100% survival rate for stage 1 breast cancer, 100%. I think the survival rate for stage 4 is something like 32%. That's the other extreme. So still very low.
Mm-hmm.
So while the foundation is making great inroads into the research, we are still losing 9 Australians every day. So I hope, you know, my humble story reminds people to do their checks, helps people going through it as well, that I've come out the other end and I'm here to tell my story, and I'm here to let people know that there is life after cancer. You will find yourself again. And in a weird plot twist, you'll actually grow as a person. I'm so proud of what I've gone through and how I've rehabbed myself back to where I wanted to be and who I was in life. It's made me feel better about myself, just having had gone through that experience. And the other silver lining for people who are in the middle of it is you will come out of this with a perspective on life that only those of us that have been through this journey can appreciate. When you're sitting in front of people and they can't look you in the eye and tell you that you're going to survive this, when you do, it's incredible. And things hit differently. And for that, I'm grateful. And that's the sort of message I'd like to pass on to those people.
Colette, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. I appreciate you diving in and sharing your health journey with us. And for any of our listeners who want to learn a little bit more, I'll put links in the show notes below.
To this podcast, please give us a 5-star review and share it with someone who you think would benefit from it. We want to help as many people as possible live healthier lives. This podcast is general in nature. We aren't doctors or health practitioners. But if this podcast has prompted something for you, we really encourage you to make an appointment with your health practitioner and get advice that is tailored to you. This podcast is recorded on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.